This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, State Representative Sean McCann, the Democratic nominee for State Senate in the district which includes Kalamazoo County. But first, Judy Wicks is known as a leader in the local food and environmental stewardship movements. She will speak on Thursday in Sangren Hall at Western Michigan University. Wicks' visit is sponsored by Western's Office for Sustainability. Her address is called Building a New Economy. What's Love Got to Do with It? Judy Wicks, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure, glad to be here.
Let's take our listeners back a little bit and talk about how you got involved in the idea of sustainability in terms of also things like local food. Where are the origins for you in those things?
Well, I guess you could go back to my childhood, in a sense, and then I grew up in a small town where I saw the role of small business people in community life. And I also had a family that was very interested in healthy local food. My parents had a large vegetable garden, and so we ate from that garden, and my mother also preserved foods for the winter. And so I grew up in that kind of household of appreciating fresh local food, as well as small business and in our community life.
And the benefit of local food, is it health? Is it economy? Is it a combination of those things?
Oh, definitely a combination. When food is shipped long distance, it's bred for shelf life and for uniformity of size and shape for packing, whether it's tomatoes or peaches or whatever. And that process of breeding for shelf life breeds out a lot of the nutritional value as well as the taste. And so that's why when we taste these tomatoes or peaches or whatever that's out of season, that's shipped long distance, it tastes like cardboard, you know, because it's the important thing to the producer is that it make it to the shelves and, on the other side of the country or the other side of the world or whatever. So A, it is more healthy for us to eat food that's raised locally and, of course, organically without pesticides. And then it's also an economic issue because we've really lost, we as people living in communities around the world really have, in many cases, lost our self-reliance in food, that we depend on large multinational corporations to be shipping us food long distance. So we've really lost self-reliance in our basic needs all the way around, not only food, but energy and clothing and building materials, all the things we most need to live are, for the most part, shipped long distance. So that's an important part of my work to show the urgency, really, with climate change upon us, that we build communities that are self-reliant in basic needs. And then we trade, you know, with other communities and have global trade so that we are able to exchange what we might have in excess for what we don't have locally, whether it's bananas or coffee or whatever. And then we also export what's unique to our own community, what our local entrepreneurs have invented, a special fashion, a wine, a cheese, a unique invention of some sort. So it's not about just local. It's about having our self-reliance on basic needs locally, but then trading globally and many other things, all the things that are unique about what it is to be human, are the creative inventions and specialties that come from another culture are a great treat to be traded, but something that we don't have to in order to stay alive.
So can a company be environmentally friendly, support local food and the local economy, pay a living wage, which your companies have been credited for, and still at the end of the day be profitable?
Well, that's how that was what I was a model in a sense. I think that's why the White Dog became famous. Not only did we have great food and a great atmosphere and lots of activities that drew people to our business, but we stood for something in the business world of being a company that could do well by doing good. And of course, there's many other companies that do that as well. We're not totally unique, but we did demonstrate that we could, you know, buy local organic food, pay a living wage, sign up, you know, for 100% renewable energy, you know, do all these environmental practices like solar hot water, composting, recycling, and so on, and make a profit at the end of the day. And I do actually think that and I think larger companies, many companies are recognizing that. Operating in harmony with nature is the most efficient way you can operate and is the most economical, and that you can be more profitable If you take the time to invest in practices that are aligned with natural systems. And, you know, as a civilization, we either do that or we perish. And I think, you know, we've gotten into our heads that man is so smart, that man is smarter than nature, and we don't need nature, and we can create inventions and have technology that makes nature unnecessary. And that's a total pipe dream. So the more we as businesses can model this concept of working in harmony with natural systems, the more likely we are to evolve as a civilization rather than to die out.
Let's step back a bit. You mentioned the White Dog Cafe. Explain a little bit about how that got started and what it grew into over time in Philadelphia.
Well, it started on the first floor of my house in 1983. I started a muffin and coffee takeout shop. We didn't even have tables and chairs at the time, and gradually grew the White Dog into a $5 million business by expanding into a couple more houses on our street of Victorian brownstone houses in West Philadelphia near the campus of the University of Pennsylvania. And, you know, I slowly grew it to the a size of 200 seats. And then next door, we had a gift shop that sold locally made products. And the White Dog became kind of a hub board discussion on progressive issues. We would have table talks or dinner or breakfast on the issues of the day, whether they be environmental or foreign policy or public education or local arts and culture. We did neighborhood tours, solar tours, tours to go out to farms, affordable housing tours, you know, many different subjects. And we also had an international program where we did tours internationally to show our customers and staff how U.S. foreign policy affected the lives of people in different countries. So we would go to those countries that were at odds with the U.S. government, you know, anywhere from, you know, Cuba and Vietnam to the Soviet Union, or to hotspots where the U.S. was funding a civil war, such as in Nicaragua or El Salvador. So we really were an educational institution in a sense, as well as a business that served, you know, wonderful food and had great service. So that's how we became known as really a model for environmental stewardship, a model for community engagement, and also for having a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun events as well.
Does a business which does do the things which you've mentioned there of paying a living wage, of supporting other local businesses and being environmentally sustainable, does that require finding a customer who's willing to pay a little bit more for all of that?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, we were not any more expensive than other restaurants of our caliber. We weren't a student burger joint, even though we were on the campus of the University of Pennsylvania. We did have a bar and grill menu that was less expensive, that did in fact have burgers and fries, but they were grass-fed burgers, and you know, we had organic salads and that kind of thing as well. So we really served a range of customers, from the students and the neighbors to people who saw the White Dog as a special destination for an anniversary dinner or whatever. But our prices were competitive with Center City restaurants out in the University of Pennsylvania area. We probably were the most expensive restaurant in the area, so it was not a place, as I mentioned, that the students would go every day for dinner. But when their parents were in town, that was the destination. And a lot of our customers drove to the restaurant in West Philadelphia from Center City and the suburbs because of the quality of our food. It was our popularity, our high sales, that made us most profitable. And I think that people came to the White Dog not just because they were hungry, but because they wanted to be a part of something bigger than themselves. You know, they wanted to be a part of the food revolution. They really liked the idea that we were the only business in Pennsylvania, and when we first did this, that had switched to 100% renewable energy. So people, having these good practices was part of the draw of the White Dog. Even though we might not make, if we were charging, I don't know, say $25 for a steak, and our competitor in a wealthier part of Philadelphia, say, was charging the same amount or even more, we might not make as much per steak because we were paying for grass-fed local steak, which might be somewhat higher than the industrial agriculture system where restaurants just order from a major distributor and everything is shipped in from Omaha or whatever. You know, but we made up for making less per dish because we had organic or breastfed or whatever by the volume of the many people who came there because of those things. At the time, there was no one that was committed solely to serving only animal products from small farms, you know, pastured pork, grass-fed beef, free-range chickens and eggs, and also sustainably caught seafood. It was another thing that we were known for, rather than seafood that was caught with the big nets where there's a lot of bycatch and harm done to the oceans. We bought only from fishermen who used single lines to catch their fish, and we never sold anything that was endangered, as swordfish was for a while, or Chilean sea bass continues to be endangered. We avoided all those fish. So that was another thing that our customers could count on us for. They felt safe eating at the White Dog because they knew we had very high standards in what we purchased.
As I noted, the title of your address that you will give at Western Michigan University is Building a New Economy. What's love got to do with it? Well, what does love have to do with a new economy?
Well, I really feel that, first of all, that there's urgency in developing a new economy that does work in harmony with nature, and that's fair because we have a rising inequality problem in this country. So, and I feel in order to make this transition to a new economy that's sustainable and fair, that we need to make decisions as business people, investors, and consumers with a balance of head and heart. And I feel like our consumer society has really hardened us and closed our hearts down when it comes to economics. But we've been taught that we should, you know, fight for the lowest price, you know, that we should fight for the highest return on our investment, that we measure our success through money. How little can we pay? How much can we make? And we don't really take into consideration other factors.
So is it easy or convenient relatively for consumers, if they're interested in doing their part on their end, to know which products are the best to buy in terms of being sustainable, in terms of being the sort of things that support sound business practices, support sustainability, support local businesses?
Well, it's not always easy, and that is certainly a problem. It depends on where you live. As far as food goes, the safest thing is to buy at farmers markets, where you can buy directly from the farmer. And, you know, they have eggs and meat and produce at most farmers markets now. It's not just fruits and vegetables. In Philadelphia, at least, we have farmers markets that are year-round, where you can buy things like cheese and eggs and meat and animal products from small farmers year-round. So that's probably the most sure way, is to buy directly from farmers. But in the grocery store, there are some labels that I believe and some I don't. When it comes to eggs, there's some fake companies out there that they call themselves the Friendly Farm or whatever, but they're just an industrial operation that treats the hens in a cruel way. So I think it's hard for a lot of consumers to figure out what to buy. I mean, I always look for fair trade labels, you know, whether it's coffee or chocolate. That's pretty strong in most places now. You can get fair trade coffee and chocolate. And then I think, you know, there are also new developments that are helping with labeling. And one of them is something called a B Corporation. And if you're a B Corporation, which stands for Benefit Corporation, then you can trust a company that's a B Corp to have these values, because they're put through a evaluation system that rates their practices, from environmental practices to workplace practices and so on. And you have to have a certain rating to be certified as a B Corporation. So that is helpful, too, to the consumer and also to the investor. If you're looking to invest your money in a company that you can believe in, if a company is certified as a corporation, then you can feel safe in investing in that company as well as purchasing.
Judy Wicks, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Judy Wicks will give the keynote address for Western Michigan University's celebration of National Campus Sustainability Day on Thursday. You can find more details about that and other events involving Judy Wicks at Western Michigan University at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The 20th State Senate District features what is considered one of the most competitive races for state legislature this year in Michigan. State Representative Sean McCann currently represents the city of Kalamazoo and surrounding townships in the state house. He is the Democratic nominee for the state Senate for the district, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. Sean McCann, thank you for being here.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Gordon.
Let's begin by having you tell our listeners what you would do if you could get 4 years in the state Senate.
Sure. Well, I am looking to continue advancing the values and priorities that I've worked on for the last 4 years in Lansing and 10 years on the Kalamazoo City Commission and working in our community as a professional for the American Red Cross previously and the Vine Neighborhood Association previously. And I've really come to embrace particularly the value of education and how that can really pave the way for Michigan's success for the long haul. And so between that and advocating for a strengthened middle class, the ability for Michigan to grow its middle class are things that are the most important to me. Unfortunately, Lansing, I believe, has not gone in that direction in the last 3.5 years that I've been there. And so I want to continue to work in the state Senate for my values and priorities. And I think that I'm a good fit for Kalamazoo County. We have a very sort of 50-50-ish community. It's a moderate community. It values people who have a listening and sensible approach to legislation. And I think my record bears out that I have that kind of approach, that I've been very moderate on the issues in Lansing, and that I have a listening and a sensible ear for folks' issues, as well as having some courage to be a reformer. One of my big issues is gerrymandering reform in Lansing. I think that that's one of the reasons we only have a few competitive seats like we have any particular election rather than a lot more competition. So tax increases have been put on the middle class. There's been disinvestment in schools and because of Lansing's policies, and it's really been holding our state back.
So if there was going to be more money put into education, specifically K-12 education, where would you get it?
Well, the first starting point is the easiest, which is that the school aid fund has been raided for the last few years for funding to backfill the general fund so that other policies could be pursued there. So my first position on that is to stop raiding school aid fund dollars for other purposes.
Isn't the school aid fund money, though, going to colleges and universities?
Well, that is basically being done through, in my opinion, a loophole or a very poor interpretation of what the intention was with the school aid fund. If you talk to the individuals who set up the school aid fund and Proposal A, including Republicans, I have a column that I often reference from Republican Glenn Oxender, who helped set up Proposal A. They say it was never intended in anyone's conversations or discussions to be used for community colleges or higher education. The idea where that came from was that maybe we would have a K-14 concept somewhere down the line where the state would publicly fund grades basically K-12 plus 2 years of college, and that was the thought with that wording. But the reality is that those dollars are not intended to be used for universities and community colleges.
I'm assuming, though, that you would want to restore funding to community colleges and state universities, which would come from the school aid fund strictly to K-12. In other words, you're not going to take money away from community colleges and state universities at the end of the day to fund K-12 education.
No, absolutely not. That would not be my intention at all. The tax policies in the last 3.5 years have basically led to the general fund being used to backfill a large tax cut to corporations across the state of Michigan. And that's what has precipitated the cuts to schools and the cuts to many programs in the general fund budget. That's the reversal that needs to happen in Lansing, is a tax policy that's much more fair to the middle class and seniors than we've seen in the last 3.5 years.
Can you kind of give me a broad overview of what that tax system would look like? Would it be what we had in 2010 before the election, or would you have some new ideas on what Michigan's tax system should look like if it were to go through some sort of an overhaul?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't get to wave a magic wand and set the whole tax policy for the state of Michigan.
I
wish I could, because there's a lot of things.
Your view, though.
But you know, we have there's a surplus that's been generated because of these tax increases that have been put on the middle class. Some of that surplus needs to be returned to the pockets of people that work in Michigan so that they can boost the economy. And when the economy is boosted, and when our schools schools draw more employers to Michigan over the long term, then we're going to have a budget situation that's sustainable, in my view. But as long as we're putting more burden on folks like yourself and out of my pocketbook, it's going to be harder to drive a more successful economy.
Would you favor any increase in the state's gas tax or vehicle registration fees to pay for road repair and maintenance?
Those considerations were part of a budget deal, of a roads package deal that was being considered near the end of June, right before the legislature adjourned. I was hopeful. We passed some spending out of the general fund out of the House near the end of June, along with a couple of votes on gas tax increases. I didn't support those votes on gas tax increases because I didn't feel that there was any relief built into the package for folks who would have been inordinately affected by those tax increases. The Senate basically let those bills that the House sent over sit and nothing happened to them. While they worked on a package that involved higher fees for heavy trucks and overweight trucks, they looked at registration fee potential increases, looked at gas tax increases, but there was also the real important point, which was that there was also relief being considered for low-income and hardworking folks that are driving older vehicles that are less fuel efficient, and for people who would be in an economic situation where it's a harder impact if fuel taxes went up. That deal in the Senate was close, but didn't quite have the votes. The Senate adjourned, the House adjourned, we came home for 2 months, and no one was willing to go back and continue to work on making a deal. That's what I think has been unacceptable to citizens across Michigan, is that there's been inaction for 3.5 years. There's been an inability of the legislature to come to a deal in 3.5 years. I don't set the legislative calendar. I was saying, let's go back tomorrow. Let's go back all of July and August when we were in our home communities. And when we came back to work in September, still no action on roads. This is just clearly unacceptable.
So, but to get the idea of where your one vote is going to lay on this issue, you mentioned heavy trucks. So you do want to raise the money there. You say gas tax? You don't want to raise it?
Potentially.
Potentially. Okay. Vehicle registration fees?
Potentially. Again, it sort of depends on what the final package would look like.
When you talk about trying to protect people who are low income, those sort of things, what are the ideas there to raise the money and still not take it too much, at least out of the pocket of someone who isn't making as much money?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Two of the ideas that were being considered was restoring the homestead property tax credit, and the other was restoring the earned income tax credit, which was cut. One of the cuts that was made in the first year of 2011 was a dramatic reduction in the state's earned income tax credit. So those were pieces that were very appealing to me. Another consideration you didn't mention was sales tax increase. That to me is a regressive tax, especially on low income and working people. And again, that would have to be, that'd have to be voted on statewide as well. But the art of a compromise, the art of a deal is to get something where everyone walks away somewhat satisfied and willing to swallow, you know, and vote for a package that doesn't make everybody happy. And that's what failed to get done.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans, speaking with State Representative Sean McCann. He is the Democratic nominee for State Senate in Michigan's 20th District, which includes Kalamazoo County. The Right to Work bill, which passed at the end of 2012. Obviously, you voted against that, and you have said many times you thought it was a big mistake. How hard would you be willing to work in the State Senate to try and get it repealed?
I would work to get it repealed, and I hope that Governor Schauer, or Mark Schauer, is elected governor and that he would help repeal it, and that enough people in the State House are elected that also feel that way.
Why is it the wrong move for Michigan?
Really, it's very dubious in terms of economic benefits. You can find two economists that will not agree on whether or not it's a policy that works or not. And we really didn't even have the opportunity to have that full-blown conversation when this was passed in lame duck in December after the election. So to have not really given it the full benefit of a democratic review, a full process of committees and conversations and everyone weighing in. Some will say that there was plenty of opportunity to talk about this, but the fact of the matter is there wasn't. You had the governor reverse his stance on it, basically saying this is not on my agenda. Then all of a sudden it was. But ultimately, at the end of the day, this policy, along with a number of the other policies that have come out in the last 3.5 years, I think have been holding Michigan's recovery back more than they've advanced it.
How so? Explain that. What's happening in Michigan, which is preventing this recovery from being all that it could be?
Well, again, all the tax increases that have been enacted on working people and people like yourself and me have taken money and purchasing power out of our pockets and shifted it into basically a lighter tax burden on corporations and businesses in Michigan with the hope that these companies are going to create jobs, but no guarantee and no promise. When I was on the Kalamazoo City Commission and we granted tax breaks with public dollars, there was a quid pro quo understanding that that company receiving that public benefit was going to create jobs in the community. And if they didn't, then there was going to be an opportunity to review that tax abatement and discuss whether it should be retracted or not. So the auto industry rescue is really what has driven, by and large, most of Michigan's economic recovery since that happened. And yes, there have been other jobs that have spun off from the auto industry, but again, by and large, that's been what's driving it. I don't feel that the so-called right to work, and certainly not tax increases on individuals across the state of Michigan, have helped improve our economic climate.
But have the tax cuts for businesses, which most businesses say creates a more favorable tax climate in Michigan, have those created some jobs?
I guess people have to ask businesses. I'm not convinced that that's the case. And again, there was no requirement that they do. Did they just pocket the money and save it? If you don't put money into the pockets of peoples to buy products that companies make, then what do they do with it? I don't see the evidence, and I am happy to have someone try to show me.
You say that you want to work to ease the gridlock in Lansing. How does one state senator who, if you are elected, is still likely to be part of the minority party in the state Senate and perhaps in the entire state legislature, break through the gridlock in Lansing?
Well, I think, again, it's Kalamazoo County represents the kind of broad, moderate position that I think is representative of most of the state of Michigan. It's what people want to see in their government. So by electing someone like myself to Lansing sends a real signal that this is the kind of people that we want making legislation in Lansing. And depending on how the other elections go, there very well may need to be someone who's willing to have some courage to be on, to step over to the other side of an aisle if there's an important compromise that needs to be made because the voters of Michigan demand it. So, I have a record that was scored by a newsletter in Lansing, Inside Michigan Politics. It's a bipartisan newsletter that I was one of six legislators to have of basically a 50% score down the middle as far as how they evaluated legislators' votes. And I think that that's what aligns with our community. And I think that that's the most important thing is that communities send to Lansing people who align well with what their values are.
Sean McCann, thank you for your time.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Sean McCann is a state representative. He currently represents the city of Kalamazoo and surrounding townships in the 60th District. He's also the Democratic nominee for state Senate in the 20th District, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.